1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Trolled. I'm slightly beside myself because I have an all-time hero on my show today.
Have we started?
We're starting
are
now.
Are you going to edit this bit off?
No, this is all going in. I'm literally hysterical. I've plied him with cheese. I'm so happy that he's come on. I've admired him for many a year, but most notably in my life, I remember him from the 6 o'clock show. Funniest, wittiest, most brilliant podcaster and broadcaster, I think, of all time. It is Danny Baker.
Oh, bless you, my friend. There's others that give you different. But thank you.
Well, I definitely think, Danny, Trolled, as you know, is about the world of social media. It's about being strong in life. It's about standing up for who you are, what you are. Or maybe you don't know what it's about. But anyway, that's what it's about.
I've seen, and I must confess, he said, already bailing out. I've seen some of the very strong and notable people you've had on, and I shrank a bit.
Because
my story is nothing if not. Hells are popping and happy and rainbow around, you know, my shoulders, despite the recent travails. I'm not someone who I don't have much professional courage.
We'll get to that. Let's talk a little bit about how did you get into this whole thing
of
life in your business?
Well, it is a bit of a Swiss Army knife, and I honestly left school at 14. I went to a comprehensive school up at the top of Deptford High Street, and that sounds positively Dickensian, but in 72 it was the last year you could leave at 14.
Bloody, I didn't even know you could leave at 14.
Yeah, you could leave at 14. It went up to 15 that next summer. And then all my mates left. But I saw an advert for a record shop, and I was nothing if not steeped in what used to be called underground music. And I saw this advert in the Evening Standard for a shop that used to be in the West End of London here. And you've got to remember, this is long before Virgin Mega stores and high street stores. Record shops were few and far between that sold really good records. And I applied for it, and it was in Dean Street here. And they gave it to us. So I said, I'm going to leave at 14 at the Easter. It was the Easter before it went up, just before my 15th birthday. And I started there. And this was the same staff in the same shop. John and Ian, two guys, gay as tangerines, ran it. And they were just the beating heart of Soho. And I didn't know, I knew the shop, but I didn't know just how, the clientele and who came in. And within days of starting there, Mark Bolan came in, and Pete Townsend came in, and Jimmy Page came in, and more famously, Elton John walked in and walked straight behind the counter, hugging John, who was an early lover of Elton's, because Elton used to work with them. Oh. That was his. He worked in the record shop when he was first starting, and he'd worked there 3 years previous with John and Ian. And I was catapulting into this world while all my mates were still doing geography homework or being given it, whether they did it or not. It's such a convoluted story. That I left there, and I'm trying to think how to pricey this best. Did nothing, but while I was at the record shop, record shop closed down around 1976. I can't help but be partially responsible for that.
What did you do?
Well, John and Ian had left, and it was taken over by the Harlequin chain. And I must say, I took I liberated quite a lot of their stock because the shop, we were always at it. I mean, you work in a shop, you know, you do feel entitled. It was only a little shop, about twice the size of the studio. And And again, I'm trying to make this believable. This is the chain of events. In the hot summer of 76, I did nothing, but I had like 1,000 records that I used to sell in Petticoat Lane, because my dad used to get records out of the dock as well, and we were, say, he's a dock of my dad. So they all knew me, the stall holders. And I had a little fund, a few hundred quid in 75, 76. This is where the unbelievable bit. John, who used to be the manager of the shop, there's only three of us, he'd gone to New York because one of our clientele was a record executive, and he was starting his own label called Sire Records. And he asked John to go over there. And John sent to my home address their first release, which was the Ramones' first album in the summer of 76. I had it. And I know you're going to say, Dan, stop, but I had it. And then the punk thing happened at the same time, by which time my friend had started the first ever fanzine. He went to my school as well. He was working in NatWest Bank. And he said, I've always wanted to write for music papers, you know, but they won't publish my stuff. So we stay with this people. There's a payoff.
No, I'm with them.
Well, you did ask. So and he said, let's start his own magazine, which to me was like saying, let's both be airline pilots. He started it. Mark got it going. It was going 4 or 5 issues, and then I came in on it because my sister had a typewriter. She was a typist. And we were doing this when the Sex Pistols broke, and everyone said, we were ahead of the curve. There's these kids, because the Pistols couldn't be found. There's these kids who do this fanzine. The fanzine then became quite famous. After a period of time of touring with The Clash and The Pistols, the NME asked me to join. I was intimidated, so I said no. I did. I've never been intimidated in my life. But they said, Tony Parsons and Julia Birchall said, why don't you come and be the receptionist?
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I was. I became the receptionist down in Carnaby Street here, and I used to... I really enjoyed it, being the receptionist at the NME, the world's biggest selling music paper. And bit by bit, they kept saying, why don't you review this record? Why don't you... Again, 6 months later, I'm in New York with John Lennon. I promise you, and I spent the next 2 or 3 years bouncing around the planet with bands in the States and all this. Got to remember, I was shot out of a cannon at 14 at school.
God, you really were?
Well, this was the basis of the first tour I did. And then from after that, because Janet Street Porter had interviewed us as punk rockers, she started this new youth series. And I'm sitting at the NME thinking, I can't be around here wearing a leather jacket at 30. I'm still only like 21.
My God.
I've been doing that for 3 years by then or whatever. And so and she rang up and said, I'm doing this new youth program. I want you to do it. I said, what do you want me to do on it? I knew Janet from... And she went, no, I want you to do it, dummy. I want it to be your show. And that was it. Wow. I've never applied for any jobs, and that became the... it was called 20th Century Box. And while I was doing 20th Century Box, I was in the bar once when 20th Century Box was just about to finish, and they were talking... Janet had the filthiest mood. They want me to do this show. I mean, there's loads of expletives in it. They want me to turn like Esther Ranson. I'm not like that. I don't like doing popular shows, but I'm under contract, she said to me. It's all right with you. You can walk away. And I said, what is it? And she said, this new show they're doing, which is like, that's life. It's going to be funny news things. And I, as luck has had it all through my, literally, I mean, this is dumb luck, said, here's a story. All the pubs over in Bermondsey are closing down because the docks had. They're opening as cocktail bars. And what? I said, yeah. And look, this fellow who turned out to be one of the producers of it said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, the Horse and Feathers is shut. It's just opened up again as, you know, as the Bitten Feathers and its sofas. And it, well, this became hilarious given how the area was. And then they rang us 2 days. That thing you've said, everyone likes it. Do you want to do it?
Oh, my God.
And that was the first 6 o'clock show. And I was on that for 6.5 years with Michael Aspel.
Oh, really?
Having already toured the world with, you know, I stayed at Michael Jackson's place for 2 weeks, if you ever want that story.
Well,
I know. But that was the kind of life I was living. So it was very, suddenly you find yourself on telly. I thought, what, oh? And one thing tumbled into another.
But you shed
that.
Skins and reinvented your whole career. I mean, it's incredible.
I never go wide-eyed, Tracy. I never think, oh, why me? I know. I was always pretty, whatever it was, you know, whether the gods sort of said, let's have some fun with him. I mean, as I say, my family never sort of went, I mean, my old man was the basis of most of my books and stories, was never one of them dads, aren't you going to get a proper job? Never. He always called it typing, never writing. That's a typing game, boy.
I love that.
But we were an extraordinarily happy family on a big old estate over in South East London, the Silver Estate, which is now private, you know.
Well, because Peter
gated.
Kay paid you in that...
I'm forgetting.
You,
I'm going to let
you
know
all
this.
About, yes.
Well, that's, you know, and all it needed was me and Jeff to husband some of the stories towards
that.
Was it
odd seeing you, your life?
Not really. The weird thing is, and you all know this, it should be. It was for my sister who turned up on the set, but me and Jeff took 2 years to put that together. And you know, you'd have to be a bit... a bit guileless to turn up and go, oh, well, all this for me. Yeah, it's not quite an easy process to actually get it. It doesn't happen overnight. So it wasn't. We knew it was a good story, but you approached it like that. Laurie Kinnaston, of course, who played me twice nominated for Young Actor of the Year.
Thank you.
Currently, Mr. Kinnaston. it's probably odder for him, but it was of all my jobs, the number one was obviously doing that. But I've never had many bad ones, you know. Not really. I mean, I've done some terrible product. Let us agree, Tracy, to call the career uneven.
Well, I would say, but heavily positive. You're an early adopter, clearly, of things. Twitter has always been the social media medium that I understand. Mm-hmm. How did you get on that, and were you an early adopter of it?
No, not at all. Nobody believes this, but I'll you know, if you can bear it, we'll get that fella back in here. He can pat me down because I know and make you throw up. He can pat me down. You can go to my bag. I don't have a mobile phone.
Well, yes.
I don't. That's why I only ever tweet when I'm indoors. And they're only ever, you know, I'm not David Baddiel, who's, as far as I'm concerned, runs things, you know.
Jewish, of course, is part of the
cabal.
Well,
there is that thing,
you know.
Yeah. And him and Alison Moyer, I think, are the best at it. I've suppose most of my career, plough my own furrow with it and do. But I've got absolutely no love for it. I've got no Instagram. I've got no.
Well, I was going to say, so where does social media touch your life? How did it touch your life?
Usually, as you know, at 5:30 every night, I hold a glass up and say, good evening, everyone.
Yes.
Touch my life this year in a terrible
way,
of course.
We're going to get on to it.
It's a conduit of another face at the party. And I only ever see people I follow, because my son, I said to him, I don't want a load of noise here. I said, you know, I do live for pleasure alone. I said, I just want to see how fellow well met. And he said, well, Dad, you'll only see people you follow. And so that's all I do. I've never...
Who persuaded you to go on it? Why did you go on it?
No one. No one persuaded us. In the first year, I was writing some tremendous jokes. Really tremendous jokes. I remember during the... during the Tottenham riots. I thought, that's funny. You'd lose the appetite for that. I remember saying, I know when it was the more serious it is, what can you do? I've been a comedy writer a very, very long time. And I remember putting out... the riots reaching their peak and, you know, the whole Tottenham High Street was on fire. I said, except for the camping shop, the barbecue shop, 5 men have been trying to get that going for 10 minutes, for half an hour, and they still can't get it alight. Now, remember, I know.
Bravo.
Initially, I used to do that always on Twitter.
Brilliant.
I used to do jokes. And then it just became a way of talking about old records and everything else. But I've got no mission on it. I've got no... and like everybody else... these days, and certainly when you've got tours, it's nice to say to 500,000 people, I'm here.
I hope
it's never quite as mercenary and as bold as that. But that was my Twitter thing. What about you?
I was in a film with David Baddiel and Omid Jalili
and
Schneider. They said, oh, you should go on this thing. And I said, oh, I can't even see how money comes out of a hole in the wall. I don't understand any of this. And they said, no, you'll like it. And hours killed on sets and anyway, you know, just sort of watching Stephen Fry or watching you and just having fun. And it's turned into a sort of battleground now, hasn't it?
As I say, I, you know, just dragged into it this year, but because I don't have a phone, unless I'm sitting indoors not doing anything else, and you say, and I feel always guilty if friends get in touch and say, oh, you know, I thought you'd like that on telly the other night. But there's no, I hate to say, there's no give and take with me, you know. I don't, apart from football, matches, people think you've lost your mind. But
well, I can't believe
right.
I got you here, because Gary Lineker was on, and I, at the end I said, oh, you know, I'd love to have one. He said, well, you'll never get hold of him.
I'm quite, not because, you know, but I literally...
No, you don't have a...
No, I don't have a phone, and I spend most of my time, I'm 62 now, sitting indoors, flicking playing cards into a top hat. Honestly. people say, I did a thing just recently, which I said I'd never do again, a newspaper interview, but there you go. And they presume that you're on the phone to your agent saying, get me this and get me that.
Yeah.
No, I've had 42 years. Yeah. I've had a fair suck at a tools bottle. And I tried to retire, most people, maybe I should have done, 2 years ago. But that led on to these tours, you know, which I've done. The last one was 72 dates from Aberdeen down to the Isle of Wight, which is fine. But, you know, my wife drums her fingers and says, this retirement we was going to do, you know. Because I believe life should have a third act.
I've had
a wonderful first act with my family and growing up on the estate. The second act, like a pinball machine, like a Swiss Army knife all over showbiz from writing. You know, I've written people don't quite rightly don't know, you know, you're a writer and people associate me. When I get run over by a steamroller, you know, the Daz ads will be my what people remember us for, and that's fine. But and then the third act should be doing nothing at all.
Do you think that's what the third act should be?
Oh, without a doubt. People said, what happened to him? Oh, he lives on a beach in Portugal.
Nobody will ever know. You're just going to be in our lives forever.
No, you say, what a distressing thought that is.
But I'm sorry.
I hope not. I would wish that on us not to do that. You know, my daughter's sitting alongside of us.
Oh, your beautiful daughter.
She can pick up
Mancy Baker, we're going to come on to it in just a second. But just to screech it back onto what the...
Yeah.
So you had a bit of a... So I've always talked about people who I've admired, who have been able to, well, apart from admiring everything about you, but you got caught up in the eye of a social media storm. Take us through that night, and then subsequently, I'm interested to know how it dealt, because I get a lot of Twitter abuse.
You do,
of
yes, you do.
That I stand up but yours was different.
Because mine was the most catastrophic mistake, the most outrageously catastrophic mistake, born of something so trivial. And the consequences of it so disastrous. But it's only the fact that I know it was born to something so trivial rather than wringing my hands and saying, everything I got, I deserved. It was a stupid...
Let's remind people who made
it. My Twitter feed, and by all means, the police even had to go through it to see if there was any precedent. And all they'd have seen was kind of surreal or whimsical or stupid or goofy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a royal baby. I did a couple of tweets about the name. And then, because I used to have done for 10 years on the radio, this ridiculous, the worst TV show in the world, I'm always making it, I'm pitching it, called Monkeys Dressed as Famous People plus Fairground Music, in which I would, for a couple of minutes, I'd say, no, it's a great show, you can see it. Half an hour of a door in a field, and the door opens, and a monkey comes out of it, and the voiceover says, why, the sun never set upon her empire, it's Queen Victoria. And I knew it was like the worst show in the world. It's rock superstar Frank Zappa, you know, sniffing around for penalties. Look who it is. It's Gary Lineker. It's a stupid concept, lousy TV show. And therein lies the disaster. I had loads of photos. I've got a big goofy file of photos that I always go to. I saw this little monkey coming out of a hospital with a top hat on and a monocle and all that. And I said, Royal Babe, the Royal Babe's been born. And then within minutes, people said, Dan, you know there's mixed race there. Shit, okay. Oh, sorry. I've not got a disease mind. You know, didn't think that through. Well, that was too late.
Delete it?
Oh, God.
Straight away?
Yeah. Well, of course.
And so then how did this whole thing whip it out?
Because that's what happens. And I'm not trying to, absolve responsibility. That's what happens. And it has to be endured.
Mm. How bad was it for you?
No, it's not. The thing is, here's the thing. Whenever I, people always want to picture you sitting on the edge of the bed staring at your shoes. I am not from that kind of background and all that. I mean, remorse, yeah. You know, contrition, 100%.
Mm.
But you can't find it in... I did this newspaper interview last week, and it was only then when you realise people want... Or not want that, but expect that kind of thing. And the photographer afterwards said, my editor said, could you look serious and thoughtful? And I said, oh, do you know what? I've looked in the old armory. And not because I don't realise the seriousness of all of that, but during the time the pound of flesh was took, and quite rightly, but I'm never built of that stuff. I mean, I had head cancer 10 years ago. You know, I've lost brothers and my dad and he said, has it been the worst time of your life? Well, you'd have to be so in love with your career and public persona that you'd say yes. Of course it was ugly and abhorrent, but fortunately I'm steeled from a very solidly working class background whereby my mum, this is not related to that, but I remember my mum when Pete Townsend had his biography out, Pete Townsend of The Who, and it was... You know, a lot of it was a mea culpa for what happened to him. He was webbed up with a paedophilia thing for a while, wasn't he, and all this. And that's fine. But it was a real misery memoir, and I know there's plenty of money in those. my three books don't have... Even the cancer one is not like that. I remember my mum used to say, when people used to say, oh, I've got to tell you what happened to us, and about 30 seconds into the diatribe, she would put her hand on someone's knee and go, oh, I don't think I'm being... But it's not none of my business. And there is a lot of that. So, yes, I could misery memorise. Oh, I remember when I got the news the police was going... It just isn't in me. And that works against me because people then think you're being deflective and arrogant and all. But I simply cannot sort of deliver that. So when the photographer was taking photos, I said, can we have a few serious ones? I said, I'm nobody's reality show. I cannot fit that narrative. Yes, it was the most revolting, terrible time. But equally, am I going to be defined by that any more than I'm going to write, you know, my cancer hell stories?
In terms of what you were getting, I suppose this is the other thing, because a lot of people have said this podcast, they find it very interesting for sort of life lessons as well. You may, you know, and I think there's a lot of life lessons to be. You say you're not brave. I think that all the non-choices you've made, you obviously are open enough to have taken it from 14 to turn around and go, I'm going to take that job.
Well, that's all drafted onto it. I mean, if we ever do get around to doing a follow-up to Cried Out of a Grave, and at the moment there's still people saying, when? And the poor
they
actors.
They should. Oh, my
I know,
God.
I know. But Jeff, you know, he writes Hollywood film. And it's like, as a cliche goes, turning a juggernaut around. But it's still there. The great thing about it and seeing the shows, the amount of dumb luck, and I mean that, and you've got to be able to do it. But you say you left school at 14. Well, I knew I didn't. Our school, metalwork used to be all Tuesday afternoons, woodwork all Monday mornings. You'd do more metalwork. And Wednesday would be games. All Wednesday was a great day. Thursday, this is in the first year, 2 hours of woodwork. Friday, 2 hours of metalwork. None of us were being turned out to be captains of industry.
No.
So leaving at 14 to work in a shop, my old man, I mean, mum's, do what you want, boy, as long as you put a fiver on that table Friday. And that was it. Most of my mates left shortly afterwards. You know, it wasn't... I know nobody that went into higher education. Nobody.
But you don't live in... I think a lot of people, maybe, who would have gone into a world where suddenly they're being hugged by Elton John and suddenly being flown, they would have been frightened. Down. You don't seem like a man that's frightened by life or opportunity.
I also, genuinely, because I don't... Excuse me for eating, but...
I love it. Brought Dan this is up. Eating my cheese.
Oh, man,
my
it's delicious.
Personal cheese that I made.
Because I am shallow, and I mean that in a pretty decent... Well, no, I'm extraordinarily shallow. People think it's an act, but I am. But I think that's a good thing, and I'm stuck with it. See, the opposite of shallow is dark and deep. Never wanted that. Don't lust after it. Never wanted it. I avoid any reviews I see where saying it's dark, edgy, and certainly when people say, I watched it was absolutely harrowing. Why would you do that to yourself? We only get 70-odd summers on this amusement park spinning through space, and people say, well, it's all right for you. Well, it has worked out all right for me. If you knew the... people call them opportunities and all that, but the coincidental things... Here's something that happened the other week. Sorry about it, I'm going to take a drop of wine. Here's something that happened the other week. I was rung up by Bob Harris. Bob Harris, Whispering Bob Harris. He was doing a thing in the Midlands, sort of night with, and he rung up and said, Dan, would you do it with us? He said, I don't know what they expect, but... I said, well, interview? He said, no, we'll do it as a two-hander. Now, I like Bob and all of this. Oh, yeah, OK, all right. And there was a fee, which helped. So I made me go up to the Midlands. Degrees, two, you know, old war horses on stage talking about their rock and roll years, you know, different from my own shows. Sold out, good audience. At the beginning, I said to him, I've got a million stories, they're different to Bob's. I said, but if you're lucky and we get round to it, I'll tell you how I was in Led Zeppelin for 35 minutes. And I was. Now, then you have to put that to one side, because that literally will be here for 2 hours. I really was... in Led Zeppelin for 35 minutes, right? until I quit the band. It's another. We'll do it next time. If people want to get in touch, we'll do this next time. But at the end of the night, it was a really good, and we knew we were doing good work. And me and Bob said at the interval, we could take this out because people want to see it. I think we compliment each other. Well, it's a good show. So at the end of it, somebody shouted out, how was you in Led Zeppelin for 35 minutes? Just as we were wrapping up. So I stood up and I told them the story. An award show, long and short of it, an award show where Led Zeppelin were a duet and they'd been seen in public for a very long time. They were given a Lifetime Achievement Award. They said, but they didn't turn up and the interviewers still weren't there and everyone thought they're not coming. And at the interval when everyone was going to have dinner at the Q Awards, 1992, the door opened and in walked Jimmy Page, Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, Jason Bonham and a whole... Now, for me, I'd had a couple, to be fair. I ran down the road to Tower Records, bought the box set where you'd just come out, ran back. I thought, I don't care how uncool this is. I'm going to get them to sign that. I'm in the same room with Led Zeppelin. I'm going to try to cut this down. Point is, Robert Plant is a big football fan, saw me in this scrum of all the press around him. Danny Baker, hey, because I was doing a show 606 football at the time. Come and sit down. I sat down next to him. He started talking about Wolves, his team, and I was listening to you on Saturday. The photographers and the MTV camera, who's this? Danny's joined the band, says Robert. For half an hour, 35 minutes, I sat there talking about it. It's Jimmy, we're introduced to him all. Everyone's taking their photos. At the end of it, I stood up when they said, ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats for the second half of the... I stood up and said, you know what? I can't work with you bums. I quit the band. Technically, Tracy, I was in Led Zeppelin.
You totally were. I told that story.
Now, that's a good enough story. And say, we finished. Big round of applause. I went back to the hotel room I'm standing that night. And I thought, shall I go down to the bar? Yeah, I can't leave Bob then, because I know he was going, you know. I know he's going to be a lot of the audience, but that's all right. Went down to the bar, a few selfies and all this. Oh, I don't really enjoyed it. And suddenly, I feel my rear end get pinched. I turn round, there's Robert Plant. He'd been in the audience. I really enjoyed it. So I said, oh, hello, Robert. Hello, Robert. I said, you... He said, I'd forgotten that. He said,
oh,
it was a great...
Oh, my God.
We stayed getting quite nicely alight for a couple of hours. Then last week, he calls Bob. Calls me and said, Dan, Robert Plant's been on the phone. He really enjoyed that. And he's heard we're going out on the road with it. He's wondered if he could join us for some of the dates. Now, Tracy, that is not... an untypical story of this this career life of mine. And I don't tell it to be, you know, to say, whoa, how about that? But how about that? And also, what are the chances of that?
Well, what are the chances? I don't know.
I think I was hit by a bus when I was four and I've been in a coma ever since.
Do you think you're going to wake up in a black mirror?
I think in May this year, yeah. I was revived for a bit and then went back down again.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to. Keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Ah, interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great apps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You have an aura. You have this is like the whole. But you know, you have. I think you attract because you make people happy.
Jerry Halliwell once said to me, Jerry Halliwell. I know. This is murder, isn't it? Jerry Halliwell said, because I wrote, you know, with Chris TFI Friday for 6 years, and Jerry came on, and she said, Oh my God. I'm sorry, I shouldn't do it. Oh my God. So I said, what do you mean? I've just walked into her. I didn't know her at all. This is outside on the balcony. I've never known anyone with a stronger aura than you.
And
I said, what? She went, has anyone ever told you there's an orange aura all around you and that's luck and health? And I said, no. I was wearing a bomber jacket, but she did have orange lining at the time. And I indulged it.
Yes.
You know, I said, do you know what? It's probably not medically provable, but I'm willing to go along with this. But Jerry Halliwell herself was shocked.
My God.
At my aura.
Your aura is orange. Now, just to take your aura into a negative place, just for two seconds, on the night of that all kicking off,
yeah.
Did you read any of the
tweets? No, I don't want to be read.
Did you read any of it?
No.
Did it? So you didn't?
No. Here's the thing, Tracy, and don't think I'm just shrinking away. Like I said earlier on, when everyone says, this is harrowing, oh, it's very dark.
But, so you didn't respond to any of it?
No.
You never read any of it?
I don't, and people think you must have done. No. This would be like, now we recall this near London's busy Oxford Street.
Indeed, yes.
A couple of miles of like terrible consumerism. I have always found that, and I mean that, the equivalent of walking along Oxford Street saying, excuse me, what do you think of me?
Yeah, you're
excuse
right.
me,
you're
what
right.
do you think of me? Excuse me, I presume, and forgive me swearing here, I presume that 40% of the internet thinks, well, Watto Baker is okay. The other 60% think I should that fucker should have died of cancer when he had the chance. I presume that. Why would I want to confirm
How did
that?
You know it had kicked off then?
Well, there's a pretty strong woman your friends are saying shit and you see yourself trending. Oh. I think there should be one of those new, almost like a... Arabic blessings. May you never trend on
May
Twitter.
May you never trend on Twitter. Like, may you live in... But you
I know, but I... So I don't know, but when the agent rings up and then... when you know is when they get the press scrum on the door.
Stopping, yeah.
But then you kind of have to... I mean, yes, I said, yeah, I brought this on myself. It was just, you know, I didn't think that... See, I don't... Here's the thing that they find impossible, but I What can I had no idea whose baby had been born. I didn't. They
yeah,
said,
I think
must
that is
done.
The bit that people go, it is. He must have known.
No,
he must have known.
I've sit and people think that's a... But it's simply cause and effect. If I had, would I have done it? No. Mm. So why did you? But otherwise you've had, you know, you've been waiting 42 years for the cloven hoof to pop out of your personality. Or you really didn't know. Now, take that Robert Plant story. How improbable is that? But that's the thing. I can sit and watch the Oscars And I'll say, who's this? And Wendy will say, you must know Kirsten Dunst. You see, no, I don't. And what films? I don't watch. Mencia too. I don't watch films. But that's not to say you're some that lets you off the hook, or you're some kind of, you know, it's like when P.G. Woodhouse broadcasted the Germans. He really did not see the problem with that because he thought he was broadcasting to America and all of that. But I can sit here now and take you chapter, like when they were saying to me on the doorstep, you really didn't know that it was a mixed race baby, and I didn't like. Particularly being lectured by certain tabloids, I think we know which ones, about race, when I could have said, it sounds, you know, pat, but can you name me three Curtis Mayfield albums? You know who the last poets are? You know, what about Miles Davis? You know, there's culture and there's culture.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, I don't read the court circulars. I know who she is.
Yes.
Did I know it was her baby? No, because otherwise I wouldn't have put up what looked like a racist
tweet.
The
thing that I found fascinating, and I'm going to ask Macy in a second a question, but the thing that I found fascinating was that you, who is, in my opinion, the darling of the nation, you know, you're one of the good guys. They turned on
you
with a viciousness that I thought was so
interesting. That people enjoy that.
Do you think...
People, of course they do. Of course they do. I do think it was, and kind of remains inappropriate when we've actually got real racists out there who somehow are given, a lot of them in influential positions of power.
Apparently the President of the United States of
apparently
America.
Apparently several people involved in the political race right now.
Yes.
But me... And I think there's a little class element there for people who've not followed my career, and why should they? Oh, the Millwall support, that loudmouth Cockney. Whereas I think, and the BBC threw me under the bus immediately.
What was that all about?
I've never had a great relationship with them. I think it was a good gesture they could do to say, look what we do, how we deal with it. But because I'm not clubbable and I don't know all that lot, the funny thing for me was not the funny thing, there's nothing funny about it, but one of that mob, who fired us and rung us up, and they were rude to my wife as well. So I kind of look forward to seeing them at some do one day. Nothing violent, but I can. There's one or two phrases I would like to. And I think that was an easy one that they can chalk up on the wall and say, look at this. Whereas had I been to university with some of them and all this, the thing is they've stood on the dais with me as I've picked up gold awards for them and all this, but they never, because I'm not clubbable. And a few weeks later, one of those was on that panel for about diversity in radio, and then five white blokes sitting there, all my age, and then they made a joke of it. Yeah, we did think it was ironic, and we did point that up. Oh, so you get a chance to explain and pass your little internet Twitter jokes. Me? No, we fired him, yeah.
Why were they never positive? Because you were such a, you know, you're like I said,
the
voice
of the
name.
Very popular.
But you were so popular. You are so popular.
Well, you know,
so why were they never on
being opportunistic, I am... You know, we start again next week with a Treehouse podcast, and we're going to do exactly the same thing. Because, and again, people, when I was being interviewed the other day, the bloke had never heard the show. So when I'm explaining about Monkey Dressed as Famous People, or whether it's a sausage sandwich game, they look at it to say, sounds like impossible whimsy. But it was. But equally, it serves a purpose, particularly in times like this, like taking off tight shoes.
Yes, it's like taking off tight shoes.
And that's also a fair reflection of who I am.
Yes.
But caught up in such an ugly row, and there's only probably paedophilia that rivals it for being so extreme, There was no traction. When once I had one of the scrums around the door and they're all asking questions, looking at me quizzically, you know, did you really think black people look like monkeys? It was just such a... Where do you begin with that, you know? Or even to address it. And you can't say, I am not a racist, because it's
like saying...
You're a heartbeat away from many of my friends are black. You can't. I'm smart enough and I've been around long enough. Geez, do you know what I've even written for Harry and... William. Look at that. I literally couldn't think of the other one. Anyway, I wrote the concept of Diana at Wembley. That was my script for What It's Worth. I wrote a fantastic speech for the pair of them that the Palace said at the time was too emotional and personal. But it's right in the groove now. If you ever see it, it's in the third book. I was very disappointed. I had to go up to St James's Palace and be vetted. You know, anyway. But
do you think social media whips these things up?
Oh, I don't think. I think if it was whipping it up, now it is the culture. As opposed to being this offshoot of culture, it is the culture. And I think I can, for what it's worth and probably as catharsis, intellectualise it and say, you know what, I had 200-300 direct messages from people in show business saying, you know, and I didn't realise quite how many of my friends had been through similar things, or no, perhaps not as extreme. Hello, Jimmy Carr and people. It was all very good. And they all got in touch and said, mate, you know. But a few... said, I'd love to come out and support you publicly, but I've got a mortgage. And that made you think, and I say, not to excuse the tweet and all of that, but there is that element of McCarthyism where people dare not and have to behind the scenes get together and try to hold a rationale together that says this is where we are now.
Yeah.
I didn't feel sorry for myself, you know, because I shouldn't. Because
I always felt you were going, you know, I made a stupid mistake, genuinely.
Stupid, catastrophic.
My past predicates who I am.
It doesn't matter. It's too much fun for two-thirds of the people to get involved in that. But when I had MPs getting in touch saying, do you want to come and discuss your racism?
Oh, my gosh.
They did. I can't remember. And I told my agent to say, tell me I will if they'll discuss their opportunity.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't matter. Yeah. Fortunately, my audience really thought that was dopey, Dan. And yeah, you know, but it's in the extremes, in the black and whites and all of this. I mean, I follow your stuff, you know, about the anti-Semitism and all of this. It doesn't matter. It's a terrible thing. It's the most important thing in culture right now. And it doesn't have any effect on what people think, and in a bad way. In a bad way.
I'm probably too vocal. It's just, you know, I come from a family of Holocaust survivors. I can't seeing Rothschild tropes hanging around.
Her grandmother is Amy Rosina Goldring. You know, half of the family over there. Yes, they are.
I mean, I just can't bear seeing racism hanging around.
No, of course not.
But what do you mean? It doesn't make any difference. You don't think it
doesn't make any difference? I see people. I don't think there has been a single instance, even with people as brilliant as yourself and David and everyone else. Who's ever put a tweet in answer that somebody's gone, you know what, they're right, I've changed my mind.
Four times. Only four.
Have you really?
Four times.
God bless you. Not that it's not about that tweet, I believe it was, but equally, it is just about the fury and people. The worst thing that they ever did is put us all in touch with each other. I always thought the baloney was, especially in football and things, whereby... we actually like each other. People don't, by and large. Yeah. They don't. That's why there's always fights at parties. You know, people don't. People don't. And now what we've done is given everyone a loud hailer and everyone immunity.
I know.
Immunity. So I don't... Yes, of course, you can take it personally, but you can't take it personally necessarily. You know, you do have that choice. Mm. You think, well, I understand what's happening. When the police get involved, all right, I only lost a couple of hours until I went back and thought, this fellow just seems to, you know. And I'd use that photo in other circumstances.
I know.
We used to send out a patch. I remember saying to the journalist, I brought one in. I've got it in my bag, I think. Give us that bag over. I'll show you this because I brought it to show. And because we're dealing in absurdity here, which had catastrophic consequences. I don't know if it is in here. Yes, it is. Now, because we used to do this stupid thing, people would ask the audience to suggest. And, of course, if anyone suggested someone of colour, if someone said Michael Jackson, say, no, you can't do that. This is about saying, you know, Kaiser Wilhelm. And look who it is. It's a Viking chief. Of course, it was the mental image of a monkey dressed up as someone. That was it, you know, and even sound. And we used to send them this patch to say, you got yours read out. Now, there it is, and it's an almost identical image to what got me in trouble, right?
Yes.
Now, that we sent out for 10 years. It's a monkey wearing a top hat.
Yep.
That was what was sent out. And it says on it, monkeys dressed as famous people plus fairground music.
Yeah, yeah.
And we sent that for nearly 10 years. So I put that picture up to my audience saying, oh, Michael Dressler. Yes, of course, when somebody said there's race involved, you think, oh, shit. But that was it. Yeah. It was a catastrophic mistake. But that's not enough. I was then used as some kind of, you know, a totemistic. I mean, I was on Do You Want to Go on News Night? And I said, no,
yes,
one,
you were,
if you don't understand that this was a fatal mistake and not some kind of dog whistle.
Because I think, I know, but it, like, as you, I remember you hearing you of all people saying, well, if you don't know who I was for the last X number of years,
I've put, why would you put the gun into your mouth?
Why would you?
Because there's no traction, Tracy, in that answer. Mm. When the press kept coming to my front door, there's no. Their editors, they're not going to be able to ring their editor and say, oh, it was a mistake, call the story off.
And
no.
say, it's impossible.
It is impossible.
A man who's worked in news all his life would be unaware.
But not in news.
Yes.
But see, that's the trouble. When they were saying, you really didn't... I said, I know who she is, and now, obviously, I know what that's why you're all here. But no, I genuinely... I don't know. I don't watch Strictly. I don't watch.
Yeah.
And
but that's a sign of where the royal family has got to.
I know, exactly.
It's equatable with Strictly.
That said, I can understand the outrage and the furore, but you're never going to counter that with a claim of naivety.
Yeah.
You're not. Nor perhaps should you. And people say, well, you should know. But really, so now I've got to keep up on the royal family? I mean, now I don't tweet so free and easy because I think I could put this up and say, oh, you know, his mother got killed last week. You're off. And so
it has met Danny's daughter, Mancy Baker, who just left drama school, and I swear you're going to be, I can already feel it, a musical theatre star of the future. But tell me, you're young, you're 21, are you on social media?
I am.
And were you aware of what was happening with your dad at the time?
I was.
And how did it affect you?
It was awful. It was awful because for us, we are just seeing what we don't want to see, and we're just seeing, oh... Take away all the context, like where everything's happened. It looks like everyone's been horrible to my dad. That's it.
Turn it off.
You know, that's it. Yeah. But because we are more lucky in that he is my dad, I can listen to him and say, okay, well, I don't have to read it. Mm. It's like what he said about walking down Oxford Street. Mm-hmm. Why would I go up to people and say, what do you think of my dad right now? What do you think of my dad right now? I know what I think of him, and if I know, that's fine.
Well, I think as well, man, it's about, you know, we're an extraordinary tight family, and it wasn't just loyalty. The idea if I'd been one of them dads where they say, oh, dad's got a new head getting into trouble, there's none, not a shred of that in doing
that. Racism that he's been spouting
off. No, when he sits
every,
there, and we've never had that dynamic as well. I've always resisted that, the cliche of, you know, there's square dad and, you know, and a moody teenager. None of my kids, and I hate to say it, have ever been moody teenagers. They've never had that kind of, oh, I'm growing up still. We've never, and I think a lot of people like that. It's also not always a drunken aunt or a silly old grandma and all of this.
Yeah.
And the silly old grandma these days was at Woodstock, as we know.
So not quite, absolutely.
You know, what's this playing music? No, we know about that. So we've always been kind of, we've never fallen in with that, hopefully,
to the
that
archetype,
sort of thing.
Yes.
And I know that's, that archetype does exist, but we've not quite been like that. Yes, of course, I thought, all their mates are now saying, your old man, you know. But equally, it was such an aberration, such a out of nowhere thing that I'm sure all your mates just said.
Well, yeah, my friends and people, they were like 21, were sort of the age of people that are associating with social media, were people coming to me going, I can't believe that crazy thing everyone's saying about you know, that tone. It wasn't a, oh my God, are you okay? It was really people of my age being like, well, oh, it's ridiculous what they've put.
Yeah.
That's... we are the people that people are saying, oh, you know, social media's ruining everything. It's people my age and my
who
friends
sensible.
Who were just saying, this is ridiculous, isn't it?
My 13-year-old is, she's, I think because of all the lawsuits and death threats and all sorts of things, she's sort of aware of it. And she's sort of writing a TED talk, madly, about the effects of social media on family when you've got a parent that's sort of out in the public eye. So she found it quite disturbing. I had no idea, but she did. I wondered if you found it quite disturbing. Or did you feel...
Yes. In the sense that it's happening and it's for me, it's my dad, so it feels personal and it's nothing to do with me or even really to do with him. But the thing is, the reason I'm not very good at talking about things like this is because I realise you can just not look at your phone. You can just turn it off. You can log off.
Yes.
You can literally... put your phone in another room and not look at it. Or go on it and don't go and search Danny Baker tweet. You have to go looking for it to find it. I mean, it's difficult and different when they're on your front doorstep.
Yeah.
And that's horrible.
Yeah.
But social media, don't look. Just stop reading it.
The thing is, I find that people always say, oh, but you must. I can say, and I wouldn't say on her life, I have never once tried to look at any tweets from that period. Why would you? It's bad enough going through
it. It's like self-harming, isn't
it? I don't understand. I mean, God knows, I admire... So anyone who fights that fight, and I'm not running away from it, but it's just, we are, you know, again, this makes people curl at the lip. We have a tremendous time. I made a tremendous, massive, huge mistake, but I refuse to cave in either, you know, in personally. I refuse to cave in personally because I know what happened there. I know what happened there. People, and it... And if, I'm not going to win anyone over because a root, God knows, it must have been appalling that people have taken that information at face value, just seeing that tweet, only knowing a bit about us, oh, that fella. But you'd have to be the sort of person, I think, if you'd have to be the sort of person who goes to the cinema, watches a movie where in the opening scene, there's a dead body on the floor and a woman standing with a smoking revolver and the door opens. You'd have to be the sort of person, if that's the opening scene, to say, oh, well, we know, let's go. Yes. You don't want to dig any deeper. You don't want to find what happened there, and that's it. You're not going to win over people who do that. They also don't want to be won over. They want you to... You know, I can't imagine there's ever a last tweet. And you said four, and I had no idea about that. Is it worth the trawling through the 300 otherwise?
I don't know. For me, I think... There's another cheese there, by the way, so if you like that was a blue one. You might not like the blue cheese. I think I see it as, like, just social media. I mean, it is. It's mad. It's like a door that is shut, and then if you open it, it's like noise, and so you have a choice. I just think, for me, it became, rather than this fun, witty thing that it used to be, it sort of became a radicalised site where people were getting radicalised.
I don't think that's necessarily Twitter. I think society is like that.
Do you?
I think people turn up at rallies. Are people even in smaller groups in the local pub will gather and be provocative, load of balls in the corner shouting out, hello, here comes the Labour and all that. Yes, it makes it very convenient, it makes it very easy on the old social media. I don't think people have been that much different from the time they burned witches. I don't think we're a very nice breed. All you can do, and it's almost biblical, is... And I hate this, but it's love one another. You look after each other, you carry on, as I say, through this veil of tears as best you can. But do you seek it? I mean, I don't know. Did you ever go through your cuttings after a...
No.
Well, there you are. What's the difference? If someone used to... You'll notice, I used to get in a cab, and I've done some stinkers of programmes, you know? Absolute stinkers, but that's a career, you know?
True.
Fred Astaire made some bad films. How about that? So you get in a cab driver, go, poor me. He don't like you in the Express today, does he? Eh? Seen what they've said about you? And I would never say no, what? I'd say, oh, yeah. But you presume that. And I think even without my catastrophic error this year.
It only this year?
Yeah, it was in May.
God, it feels like a lifetime. I mean, it really feels like it was 5 years ago.
No, mate, it was in May. But fortunately, again, on the up plus side, I'm 62. I've been 42, 43 years around this racket.
Yes.
If I was 30 years old, again, in this interview the other day, the fella said, is your career going to recover from this? I think you're mixing me up with David Walliams.
Yeah.
Bless you. Yes. I said, I'm not a fixture of the box anymore. and what I do with the tours and the podcast shows, that's where I am anyway. Yeah. Perhaps I shouldn't be doing anything.
No, you got to be.
But that, don't get me wrong. Yes, of course, it was a miserable, horrible time. But compare that to a death in the family, to being diagnosed with head and neck cancer. Public perception of you is in the top 10, but it's not in the top 5.
Well, did you ever stand up to bullies in life? You don't seem like
that's a terrible thing to say. I've never been bullied.
And have you ever been around people who bully other people?
At school, yeah. Yeah, I ain't going to say
and
no.
And in this business?
But the idea that you, again, in Deptford in 1970, the idea that when... I remember getting... this is why it lives in me. I remember getting... And I don't go along with the cliche that you either had to be a fighter or funny to survive. No, you didn't. It wasn't Alcatraz.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was a council at a big school. I loved it. When people used to move up our estate or leave our school, we all went, where are you going?
Yeah.
We had a brilliant... We all know each other. But equally, yeah, there would be, you know, I hate to say it, but weak kids and all of this. And it is, you know, not saying you pummel them, but I remember there was a kid at our school. name is Kevin. I won't give his surname. But he was, you know, he just went up to, and we did metalwork, of which I'm terrible. I have no traditional male skills at all.
Did you not go to those double classes?
I went to all of them, but I just couldn't do it.
Oh.
No, I've always been, my brother was brilliant. My brother could, you know, he could knock you up the studio in 2 hours. I was cerebral. I was, you know, and that was just the way it works. My mum and dad used to, you know, they weren't, my dad was quite a lefty, but there's certainly, you know, a lot of books in our house. But and I remember when Lankford did, we had to make a... see, that's what Cradle of Grave does. It tries to say, look, and I believe quite rightly, all cultures say, we can make the jokes, you can't. And in working class culture, this was pretty, you know, it's pretty... And he made this thing, and it was worse than mine, right? But he made it, and then you had to put it forward, like, at the end of Bake Off at the end, and this coat hanger just was like nothing. It was just terrible. And he handed it in, there was giggling in the class, and I couldn't help, I said, what are you going to do when you leave school, Kev? Be an engineer? And he got this massive laugh, and he looked round so wounded. And I remember this, I remember it. And I didn't think at the time, oh, no. I actually thought it was, you know, to be honest with you, it was getting a tremendous laugh. I know that's terrible. But the idea now you can look back and do revisionism is nonsense.
Yeah.
You might as well say, how come they didn't, you know, computer profile Jack the Ripper? It didn't exist then. The sensibilities. Last thing, there's an arrogance of chronology that this generation, or certainly the position we're in now, does not acknowledge. The idea that the world gets better, that we now are smarter than people were years ago. You know, when people say that, they love the phrase, you like that, so ahead of its time, that film, that means you've just discovered it. Oh, W.C. Fields was so ahead of his time. W.C. Fields was one of the biggest stars of his day. The fact that you get it now, he wouldn't get his films made now. The idea that we're smarter now than people were in the 30s mm-hmm. or in the 1850s, we're not. We are the same, and I use the word advisedly, monkeys walking around trying to make sense of all of this and with all the foibles and failures involved in it. But the overthinking of why we should be better than we are is never going to get a resolve. Never, 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 because we're not. We're not. We're a load of goons walking around and saying it's theme park for 70-odd years, but it's up to you if you want to sit in a room and talk to another fellow sitting in his room and have an argument. That's fine too. Or you can not do that. You know.
Danny Baker, thank you. That's actually brought tears to my life.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're right. We've got 70, 80 odd years. Try and make it the best we can. But be.
And then you're gone. You know, I think back. Gone. You know, if you could get hold of David Bowie, you know, Keith Chegwin, Judy Garland, and say, do you want one more day back in the old hoopla? Yeah. Yes. What, with all the problems?
Yes.
And so here we are. You know, sort of, what about tomorrow? Well, let's find out, you know. And I said, it's not me being philosophical, it's me being shallow, but sometimes it really, really helps.
And you've given me real food for thought, because actually social media is a choice. You don't have to do it. You don't have to be on there arguing. You don't have to read any shit about yourself. You're totally right. Thank you. God bless you for coming on. I can't believe
I not at all. I'll come back any time, mate. This is very, very good and cathartic for us.
Thank you.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Get yourself some gas and air and breathe deeply.
We're talking on the phone while he had his arm inside my vagina.
In my head, I was saying, could you go and see if the anaesthetist is free? And what I was actually saying out loud was, help me!
CD player doesn't work. I was like, I'm sorry! Why am I fucking CD player? Where's my playlist?
That's One Torn Every Minute with me, Beth Murray. Available now from Great Big Owl.
Help me!
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.